Blog Talk Radio.
Mr. Luke Morrow, talk some sports, prepare for the March in the week ahead. Justin Thomas, I mentioned this yesterday in the sprint, Justin Thomas won the CIMB Classic in Malaysia. Good man, 22, golf's getting younger, kind of crazy, but that's what happens. Golf gets young, then it gets old, then it swings young, and right now we're on a run of 23, 23, 22 for the current ages of golf in this country. And Justin Thomas, who came so close to Greenbrier, so close elsewhere, broke through, beat Adam Scott, bounced back from a double on 14 after hitting in the water. Just a really sturdy moment. Really, you know, bounce back with birdies at 15 and 16 and, 15, 16, 17, and just really nicely put himself in the shape and put himself in the form. And that's what you like to see. That's what you need to see. So when these golfers step up in big moments, that's exactly what our friend Justin Thomas did. Jordan Spieth's BFF now has his win. Apparently he's buying all the drinks for Mr. Spieth this week in China, and on we go, and it leaves, interesting question, best player never to win a PGA Tour event. Probably now, in terms of the young guys, Tony Finau. Let's go to last year's FedEx Cup standings. In terms of this is non-rookies, best player not to win a PGA Tour event. Cameron Tringali's up there, won the Templeton Shootout, hasn't won a PGA Tour event. Paul Casey hasn't won it forever. He's won before, hasn't won it forever. Let's see. Victor Dubuisson, who won in Turkey over the weekend, he probably counts. Russell Knox gotten a victory? He's up there. Those are the ones that jump out. Those names jump out. Amazing that Phil Mickelson was 61st in FedEx Cup points. Those are the names that kind of jump out as we look at kind of navigating our way through who will next line up to be the next first-time winner on the PGA Tour. 500 FedEx Cup points to the CIMB Classic winner. We will be back in 30 seconds.
Sometimes tough isn't enough. Lou Gehrig was baseball's Iron Man, but lost it all to ALS, a muscle-wasting disease that destroyed his skills and ended his life in just a few years. MDA's been leading the fight to vanquish ALS for decades. Truly effective treatments must be found, because the battle Lou Gehrig fought is still being waged in households across America. call 1-800-572-1717 to learn more about what MDA is doing to strike out ALS and save lives.
Luke's with us, voice of Stetson football and basketball, with us for the Sunday Sprint football mornings. Hello.
Good evening.
I got to pay attention to the Vikings now. They've been flexed into a 425 slot.
Yeah, how about that? We don't want your attention or the nation's attention getting flexed. I like flying under the radar. And it was actually something, you know, the Vikings got a good amount of attention in the offseason and they got punched in the mouth week one. And that was something that Coach Mike Zimmer said afterwards, that maybe they bought into all the hype in the offseason and aren't as good as they thought. So hopefully that doesn't occur if the team continues to play well.
Yeah, but let's be real. A lot of the attention you got was because of Adrian Peterson, and that wasn't positive.
Yeah, of course. And most of the attention the Vikings get is for things going on off the field and obscure stories that always seem to happen to the Minnesota Vikings. But on top of that, with the return of Peterson, I think there was an excitement in the offseason to be able to pair him up with the team that they had last year, and still last year surprising some people and having some success. Then once you throw in a guy like AP, I think the expectations increased in the offseason. And so to me, it's no surprise that they're 5-2 at the moment, but I'm sure it's many others it is.
It's interesting. We saw the Giants lose a bizarre game yesterday. The Jets play a lackluster game. Green Bay play a lackluster game. There were some very lackluster teams and lackluster games yesterday.
And I think just this whole season, I mean, that seems to be NFL 2015. There's a lot of poor teams, a lot of poor football being played, especially when you pair together two of the poor teams. And you look at the Giants specifically, not only in that game yesterday, but, I mean, that division as a whole. I believe they're still in first place, and they're under 500. So, you know, the NFC East is pretty poor right now. And when you have those teams squaring off against each other for each team playing six games in the division this season, that's going to lead to some extra bad football as well. And that's just the NFC East. There's a lot of other bad teams right now in the league as well. And then there's some really good ones at top. So I think for maybe the first time in a while, there's not that depth that we're used to seeing throughout the NFL. There's a handful of good teams, and there's a lot of bad teams.
It's interesting. When we talk Sunday mornings, it actually starts with a Thursday conference FaceTime, where basically the two of us try to convince each other that games suck and we have to do this game because we have to find a game, or at least that's been the way it is in 2015. And here are the Tampa Bay Bucks that just remind everybody, once in a while, the Bucks actually do positive football things, you know? And you and I hated that game, and boom.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's a good thing about the NFL, about football. And so despite how bad the matchups may seem, or one or both teams may be, you know, as Chris Berman always says, they play the game. And games aren't played on paper. And another cliche to throw out is that they, you know, any given Sunday. So the Bucks have surprised me. I claim them to a friend before the season that they would be the worst team in the league this year. And Jameis Winston, after a terrible debut, really has picked it up and has looked a lot better. And that team overall, which I think is still a terrible football team, still has, I believe, three wins now, including that one yesterday. But I think the bigger story for me coming out of that game, not so much Tampa's victory, but the Falcons and how they have to get things together, because what a difference it's been for them in the first, three, 4 weeks of the season to now their last four games, and especially that offense. They look like a totally different team, and they look pretty bad the past few days because the mistakes are very simple and fundamental ones, whether it be snapping it to the quarterback or handing it off to the running back, just things that make you scratch your head.
We're talking to our great friend, Mr. Luke Morrow. Aren't you happy that I call you a great friend of the program?
I am honored.
I'm glad you're honored.
It is one of the greatest compliments I can be given.
I'm honored that you feel honored. the Mets, you're Terry Collins. What do you do?
Well, you know, Terry Collins, he got in trouble earlier. I think it may have been right at the end of the season or beginning of the playoffs when he was saying, you know, this is all just gravy now at this point for a guy who has waited so long to get into the postseason. And with the Mets team this year where the expectations may have been pretty good for this squad, especially compared to years past, but I think heading into the year, you know, I don't think many people had the Mets penciled in as the World Series representative for the NL team. I don't think a lot of people saw the season the Nationals had coming, and then on the flip side, the season the Mets had. I think that maybe more people thought that would be reversed. And so there's no such thing as moral victories, and it's tough to feel good after a loss, especially when you lose in the World Series. But I think there are a lot of positives for the Mets fans and for the organization that they can hang their hat on moving forward. And I don't think this is a one-type deal. I think they'll be back next year, maybe not in the World Series, but they'll be a contender in the NL. And I think for years to come, they'll be certainly a team that will be fighting for the playoffs year in and year out. So there's a lot of talent there, tough end to the season. But I think if you told people, Mets fans specifically, at the beginning of the year, hey, the Mets will make the World Series this year but lose in five games, you know, will you sign up for that? I would assume 100% of fans would certainly do so. So I think they exceeded expectations this year, and I think they'll continue to be there in the NL moving forward. They have some questions to answer in the offseason, but they have a lot of talent.
You didn't answer the question. Would you have pulled Matt Harvey or kept him in?
Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't realize that was the question. No, I would have left him in. And people, to me, there was no decision. I know Collins originally wanted to take him out, and Harvey may have talked his way into it. But to me, you had to send Harvey back out in the ninth. No one should be upset with that. Now, after the walk, should he have taken him out? You can make an argument. Even me personally, watching it last night, and in hindsight, I still have no problem with Collins leaving Harvey in after the walk. If you're going to send him out for the ninth, you know, to me, you should give him more than one batter. Even in a two-run game like that. So I had zero issue with the way the ninth played out in terms of Terry Collins and how he managed that. Personally, I would have done the same exact thing.
Me too. I would have done the exact same thing. Thunder Magic. I didn't think I'd be talking about this today. But Thunder Magic, Victor Oladipo, your boy went nuts.
You know, he's a good player. I'm a big fan, and I like this Magic team as a whole. I mean, I know they're 0-3, but all three losses have been by about five. I think their loss to the Bulls, I'm losing track of, I think it was just last night, was their biggest loss of the season, of the young season, and that was by like 5 points. So, you know, they're a young team. I think they have a lot of good young talent, and now a new head coach who's getting them to play defense, which was their big issue under Jack Vaughn the past couple of years. Defense was atrocious. One of the worst defensive teams in the league. I think they'll be different this year and moving forward. And Oladipo is just one of a handful of guys on that team that I think can really be something moving forward in the NBA. Now, the issue with the Magic, however, and I think part of the reason why they're losing these close games here early in the season is because they don't have a Carmelo or a LeBron or even somebody a tier less than those guys who can take the ball at the end of the game and score. And hopefully that guy is Oladipo, and he tries to be that guy in Orlando, but he hasn't been able to do it on a consistent enough basis where late in a close game you need points, you give him the ball, and he's going to score. So they're a young team that I think still learning how to win. But, you know, their point guard specifically and really that whole starting five, I think, maybe not this year. Maybe they'll need some more time, a couple more years, but I think they have some stars on that roster right now.
We're talking to Luke Morrow because we always talk to Luke Morrow. We are, it's interesting. You talk about the Magic and lacking the big person. Who are you most interested in seeing this year NBA-wise? Who are you most intrigued by? For me, obviously, will Carmelo behave? And will the Knicks around them behave is one story, and then Kevin Durant's another. What are you interested in?
As we've talked before, I mean, the NBA is a star league, and it comes down to each team's star. And there's none bigger than LeBron, and even Carmelo is up there, top five, maybe top three in terms of stars in the NBA. So for me, it's those two guys, and I think it has to be – certainly LeBron year in and year out, but specifically this year, everyone's making a big deal already about, you know, his opening night performance and these first couple of games for the Cavs. But it will be interesting to see after the back injury at his age now with all the miles he has, if there's any sort of decline in his performance at all this year. I mean, I think he'll still be the best player in the league this season, but he may not be LeBron we got used to seeing in the prime of his career. This may begin the slope downwards in his career, not to say that he won't be a good player, but just may not be the same guy. And then, of course, Carmelo on the other side in New York, where the Knicks, to me, still don't have a whole lot of talent. I'm not expecting a whole lot from them, but it's going to come down to Carmelo. And I think how much success the Knicks have this season will rely on how well Carmelo plays. And then we heard about him having a personal vendetta against the Wizards and going out and flying lights out after circling the game on the calendar and whatnot. So, you know, if he plays with a chip on his shoulder, that will certainly help. But I think Carmelo has something to prove. And if he can prove that this year, the Knicks will be much better than I think people are expecting. So for me, those two guys, in terms of LeBron and maybe his health and Carmelo, and if he can perform to the star standard that he's given.
Yeah, I'm straight. The Knicks play the Spurs tonight, and Ian Bagley of ESPN New York said, somebody asked Greg Popovich if he watched the World Series last night. He hadn't. Sports are boring, Popovich said.
Yeah, he's always good for a soundbite or a quote, Popovich.
You got that right. Vernon Davis traded to the Broncos. This is a Peyton Manning that looked revitalized last night, and lo and behold, he's got a Julius Thomas replacement.
Yeah, we talked about it yesterday morning on the show. You know, can we get an old-school Peyton performance? Because that's what I thought would be necessary to beat the Packers. And I mean, the defense played phenomenal. I've never seen Rodgers look like that. And on the other side, Peyton looked like Manning of old. But it was still funny to see that he had no touchdowns and an interception, which has been his issue this year. But regardless, he played a very good game. Now you throw in Vernon Davis. The Broncos, their weak spot offensively is the tight end. I don't know if Vernon Davis is going to be able to fill that void enough. He's not the same Vernon Davis from a few years back. But, you know, the Patriots in the AFC, I think the Broncos realize that it's going to take a lot of wins to A, become the number one seed, if possible, and then B, to even compete with the Patriots in the postseason, you need as much talent as you can gather. So, I like the move for the Broncos, but we'll see how effective Davis is.
Talking with Luke Morrow here. Final question for you, Luke.
Mm-hmm.
It's a short show today. Final question. The MLS playoffs, golf in China, hockey, CNBC, what would you rather watch? MLS playoff, golf in China, the NHL, or CNBC?
You know, that's tough. I'll say, for me, it'd come down to either hockey or I would even say golf. But I may go hockey.
Okay. That's Luke Morrow. He's a good man. Thank you, sir. See you Sunday.
You got it. My pleasure.
We'll see you Sunday for the Sunday Sprint, 11:30 a.m. Eastern Time, and we'll see you here next Monday, 6 p.m. Eastern Time, talking fantasy. Seeing it up, Blog Talk Radio, Golf News Net Radio Network, and iTunes. See you next week, everybody. Good night.